All right, welcome back, everyone. Can all of you hear me at home?
Yes.
Yes, I can hear Robbie, Christine's good. Okay, Sarah, can you hear me? We might have beat Sarah back. And Steve, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
There you are. Okay, and you can hear me fine too. Yay. Okay, so we're all back and good to go. All right, so we only have two sections left. That's the great news. All right, the joy of it all. And they are primarily about, in this first section, reading the crazy graphics that computers make it possible for us to make. Okay? Truly, graphical representations used to be much simpler, all right, when people had to hand draw them or whatever, and they went in as artwork and they were extremely expensive, so we didn't have as many of them, and they were much less complex. But now we have these computers that allow us to make absolutely beautiful representations of our data, but sometimes they're so beautiful that people can't really read them with any accuracy. So basically, because I failed to get my slides up, what we are going to do is we are going to page through section 5D, because I cannot possibly draw these representations, but I want to look at the ones that I remember being, you know, discussed on your practice quiz. And then if you want to send me to some particular questions that were on the practice quiz, I can call up a quiz and see if I get it. I can call up your quiz and we can look together at what you have. So we'll do whatever we need to do to make certain that we've discussed the graphs of every type if there was a particular type that was confusing to you. So I am starting on page 325, where we see two graphs, all right? The first one is about median annual earnings of full-time workers from age 25 up, and where they are grouped by their educational level or attainment. And so what we do is we look at this graph, okay? There's also two colors on here. So the colors also have meaning. The colors, the dark color is men, the lighter color is women. And then each bar represents a different level of education. Down at the bottom, we see somebody who has not even got a high school diploma. And then the next category up is the high school diploma, and then a little bit of college, and then associate's degree, and then a bachelor's degree. It just keeps going up, okay? So what do you observe in this graph? What would you say the takeaway is? What's the message that the person who constructed this wants us to get?
People with more education earn more money.
Absolutely. The school district I work for paid to have a very similar poster to this one, made in color and laminated and printed one for every classroom for us to put up in front of our students to try to keep them motivated. They're pretty concrete thinkers, so they can think about those dollars and go, okay, maybe I should stay in school, even if they can't think of any other reason why they should. So absolutely, that's the primary message. Now, I think there's a second message in this graph. Would anybody comment?
That men usually have higher degrees, or more men have higher degrees than women.
More men have higher degrees. Let's see, can we say that? I don't think we have a number for how many people are in each of these categories, do we?
Or at least when you see on the category of men, there are always more men.
Yeah, so
than
what,
women.
What's the length of the bar telling us?
Okay, yes, I get it.
It's telling us who's making the most money, isn't it?
Yes.
So the reality, the sad reality, okay, for the most of us that are online, the infuriating reality, is that most of the time, with equal
education,
men will still out-earn women,
okay?
It's just a statistical fact. It's sitting there, okay? This is how it is. It is not particularly true, I don't think, in my profession. There's nothing about my paycheck that's determined by my gender. It's just determined by the fact that I have a master's degree, I get paid a little bit more, and every year that I stay in the district, I get a longevity bonus, so I get paid a little bit more. But the same would be equally true for men in my profession. So at least, you know, as a classroom teacher, this does not impact you so much. But in other professions, it really does. It really does. So that message is there.
I would say especially in the business profession, that's where it's seen most prominently. I don't have any data to back that up.
She pulled it from the air, so she's not going to give us the number. All right. But perhaps in the business world, this is a big deal. In some
areas,
there is still a reluctance to hire a woman if she's going to go off and get pregnant and not be around. There's a bias there. And so for whatever reason, you know, but I just think it's good for us to go look at that table and go, there really are two messages here. There really are two messages that are presented in this table pretty clearly. So as we're interpreting it, we want to be thinking about that. Okay, the table beside it, all right, is looking at unemployment rates among people that are 25 and older, and again, separated out by education level, all right? Now, we do not have the men-women thing going on here. We just have the different, each color represents a different amount of education. So that darkest color are the people who don't have a high school diploma, and then the blue goes with the people who have a high school diploma, but that's it. And then we just go down from there. And they are presented on the table, interestingly enough. They are the same way as the order of the key, okay? Now, what's the message in this particular table?
The unemployment rate is higher with people that don't have a high school diploma.
Yep. Yep. Without a high school diploma, are the basic shapes of the graphs the same?
More or less, yes.
More or less, yes. You know, all that the graphs trend down together, they make that little hump together, and then they kind of jump back up all together, all right? And that's kind of reflective of what's going on in the economy overall in those years, okay? So we see that what's going on in the economy affects people in all of these groups. But the reality is always the people with the less education have a higher unemployment rate. They do in good times, they do in bad times, they do all the time, okay? And so another motivation for continuing to get more and more education is to give yourself more stability in your employment.
All right, because
there is less fluctuation, there is less unemployment amongst those that have more education. All right, now, on your quizzes, and as when we get ready to turn the page, there were these things called stacked graphs. Is this particular graph a stacked graph? What do we think?
Yes.
It has the appearance of one, doesn't it? So then my follow-up question is this. They said in a stacked graph, you're reading between the lines rather than just reading at the top. So let's look, for instance, I'm going to pick a year. The year 2000, it looks like unemployment rates were pretty low, maybe the lowest they were for all four groups. Everybody agree? Are we all looking at the same point on the graph? Okay, so in the year 2000, what was the unemployment rate for the no high school degree group?
Just above 6%.
This is what it looks like to me too, all right? It's definitely not all the way to 7. It is a little bit more than 6, okay? Now, on the other hand, when I go down and pick one of these groups in the middle, let's just use the one that's right below it, the blue group, which is the people that have a high school diploma, but nothing further, all right? So when I am going to read what is their unemployment rate still in the year 2000, I would read it. It's less than 4. I think it's more than 3.
You know, maybe 3.5,
but something between 3 and 4. Do you all agree with me? Are we still reading it the same way?
Yes.
I think I see nodding heads. Okay, excellent. So, did I do anything to read between the blue and the red, or am I just reading off of the grid over to the left? How do we get the between 3 and 4 idea?
Well, it skips percentages.
Right. I'm looking at the numbers over to the left, aren't I? Rather than comparing between the two. Okay. So this one really is not what the author of the textbook is calling a stacked graph. Though they have stacked 4 pieces of information on this one graph, all right? So there's a sense in which it's stacked, but not as they're using the term. And I want to clarify that term and make sure that we're all understanding what the author is meaning. So in comparison to this one, where every line I read off of the grid to the left,
okay? Now I want you to
turn the page and look at the bottom of page 327, where we have this, you know, very encouraging topic, trends in death rates for 4 serious diseases. Do you see the graph I'm looking at? Everybody got it? It's kind of maroon at the bottom, and there's a slice of blue and a lot of green and some orange. Are we looking at the same graph? Nod your head. Yay, there's a thumbs up. Okay, thank you. Very good. Now, this is what the author is describing as a stacked graph. Okay? Now, we do have 4 lines, but it's colored in solid. And that's kind of one of your clues, that we're going to read this thing a little bit differently. Let's look at first the example they're giving us, and then we're going to try our own luck at reading some other points. But they are describing for us on this table the how many people, let's see, in 1980, see they made their black arrow right above 1980, and they made it in the green section. So we're talking about deaths caused by cardiovascular disease. And then they're saying, how many? Okay, how many are there? What was the death rate for cardiovascular disease in 1980? And so to figure out what that is, they say we've got to see that the bottom of the green lines up with, what would you say? I'd say it's over 100. Would you agree?
Somebody
throw out a number for me. Where's the bottom of the green? What do you think?
Can you tell me what page this is? I'm sorry, I'm totally lost.
No, absolutely. Page 327. This is when I'm sad that I don't have my slides. I apologize. 327 is the page number in your textbook. All right. I'll just go ahead and go with the numbers that they read. I'm looking at example 3. They say they think the bottom of the green is about at 180.
Okay, they mark
it as 180. I have to tell you that visually, it doesn't really look like 180 to me. Apparently, I can't see the straight line or something. I probably would have called it 150 if I was reading it, but they call it 180. The top of the green, they've identified as being at about 620. So I don't say that the death rate was 620 deaths per 100,000. I say 620 subtract the 180.
All right. It's the difference
between the top and the bottom. The difference between the top and the bottom. This is what a true stacked graph is like. Okay. So the wider that band of color is, the more people that are dying of that particular disease. And when it starts to get real narrow, that means you don't have very many people dying of that particular disease. Are we still okay? All right, so I don't just look over to the left and go, oh, well, green lines up with 620, I'm gonna say 620 deaths per 100,000. No, because green doesn't go to the bottom of the graph, okay? Green only goes down as low as 180, and I have to subtract the difference. If you want actual specific numbers, this is a very unfriendly graph, okay? It's difficult to get the numbers. If I was interested in people seeing exactly what those numbers were, I wouldn't pick this graph, okay? I would have presented my data in a different way. But what does this graph do really nicely? What's the message that we can quickly grab a hold of on this graph?
It shows that cardiovascular disease is consistently affecting people and causing death.
Right. It's the big category for death all the way across this thing. There is more green on this graph than anything else. So that's the first thing I can see, okay? Now, in recent times, what has happened with cardiovascular death rates?
It declined.
They decreased. Notice it's narrower out here at 2010 than it ever was at any other point. Okay, the green has the narrowest width in 2010. Any ideas why?
Probably smoking.
A decline in smoking would definitely contribute to that. We see that it's probably at about its worst around 1960, 50, when, you know, everybody was smoking. Every movie you watch from that era, everybody is smoking. So I think that's really one good suggestion why. I'm pretty certain it's not because we're thinner and fitter. I am walking evidence that that is not true, okay? My other thought besides the smoking thing would be we have so many more medications to manage things like your blood pressure and your cholesterol and your whatever. And so I think that's impacted.
Also transplants.
And we do transplants now. That's true,
so
too.
So those people that would have died because they didn't have heart transplants, now there's more like crop to choose from. Mm-hmm. Even though the waiting lists are long, it's a waiting list as long is better than no waiting list.
Yes, there are still people who do that as well. So, yeah, so we can see it's still the number one killer, okay? You always hear that heart disease is the number one killer, and, you know, that's very clear on this particular graph. What are some other takeaways from this graph? It has some interesting things that it says pretty easily.
The increase in cancer?
There is an increase in cancer? Yep, that's the bottom color, that really dark color. I'm not sure what color that is, but it's dark. And we see that it's getting thicker. It's getting to be a thicker band, okay? And so we see that death rate for cancer is going up. Now, I personally would maintain that there were probably a lot of people dying of cancer in 1900 that nobody called it cancer. You know, it wasn't diagnosed as cancer, but it probably still was. I think that's part of what goes on there, but anyway, but it could also be that we have more cancer now than we used to. Probably most medical professionals would say there is. What's the deal with tuberculosis?
It's been eradicated.
Yeah, okay. Our medication's great, all right? We hardly see it anymore. So whereas it was a significant piece of the death rate in 1900, it just disappears off of our table, okay?
And we also see pneumonia really, really, really much less of a player, and for the same reason, okay? Antibiotics are wonderful, and so.
Well, and also maybe like the transition from working outdoors. There's still a lot of people who work outdoors, but maybe more people are working indoors mm-hmm. rather than working outdoors, so it could affect the weather changes and whatnot, maybe it could affect the lung.
Possibly, yes. Okay, so I wanted to make certain we absolutely talked about a stacked graph, because when you need a numeric value from a stacked graph, you have to read very carefully and you have to do some kind of a subtraction, because you have to consider where's the bottom, where is the top, and what's the difference between those two values. I believe there is my question in back here with the questions. Let's see here.
Yes,
on page 337, just to make certain we're all in agreement, 337, question 20, let's talk about something cheerier than the death rate. College degrees awarded. That's the theme at DCC this week. It's graduation week, okay? So we can talk about college degrees awarded instead of having to talk about death. They give us a stacked graph here, okay? And we've got men and we've got women, and there's, you know, stacked one on top of the other. And then we look at this graph. So here are some questions to think about. Question A, estimate the number of college degrees awarded to men and to women. It's going to be two numbers, they say separately, in 1930 and then again in 2010. All right? So look at 1930. Tell me how many men do you think got degrees, how many women, and then go to 2010 and tell me the same thing. I'll let you think and calculate for a minute. Jot down your answer. I might call on you.
Is there a typo? Is that supposed to say 1890?
I see 1930 in question A. Oh, up above? Does it say something weird?
No, right here all the way to the left, it says 1990. That should be 1890.
That should be 1900.
Oh, yeah, 1900.
Because they're counting by 10. So one of their second nine should be a zero. Thank you, Sarah. I've never noticed that. I'm really good at just reading what I think ought to be there. Okay, what do you have for me? Let's see. Steve, how many men in 1930? What was your estimate of that teeny tiny sliver?
I guess it's about 60,000 men.
About 60,000 men. We're not going to be super critical. All right. Then, let's see. Sarah, what did you think about the women in 1930? What did you guess for them?
It looked about 100,000.
You guessed 100,000?
Maybe a little bit more than.
Okay, are you looking only at the pink, or are you looking at the pink and the blue together?
Only at the pink. So is it the bottom line of the pink or the top line of the pink?
It's the difference between the two. So the top line of the pink is right around 100,000. I would agree with you on that. Where is the bottom line of the pink?
According to Steve, it's about 60,000, right?
Okay, so that means 40,000.
Yes, exactly. And we could argue those two numbers might be even closer to equal. I mean, it's such a small sliver, it's difficult to say. But I agree that it looks like together you're coming in at right around 100,000, and probably the blue is a little bit bigger than the pink, okay? So that's the look in 1930, okay? These are graduation degrees awarded, and I am assuming this is in the U.S. I'm doubting this is an international statistic, okay? All right, so then we move to the year 2010, okay? Robbie, how many men did you think earned a diploma, a college diploma, in 2010?
Six hundred and ten thousand.
Seems like a reasonable number to me. Okay, now then, what about the women?
All right, what about the women?
Christine, how many women do you think got degrees that year?
Probably
I'm still trying to figure out the number on that one.
Okay. I know. I'm going to use my calculator just to try to do the subtraction because it's late at night. I can't do mental math very well during the day. Okay, so if we use her 610 as our bottom number, 1,000. Okay, I've got my number. What did you get? What do you think? Would you say the top is lined up with the 1,600,000?
Yes.
Yes.
I, that's what I was saying.
Let's say it's on that line. And then I have to do the difference between that and the 610,000 that was the top of the men, okay? Because those 610,000 aren't in the women's. So when I subtracted those two numbers, I got 990,000. Would somebody double check my math? Just to be certain.
I got the same number.
Okay, all right. So this is our, like I said, when you want a specific number, this is not an easy graph because you're constantly, for that top band, you've got to subtract. I think you had some on your practice quiz where there were three bands. So if you needed to know something about the middle, you had to decide where the bottom and the top were and then subtract them, okay? So it can be difficult. But there's our situation. That's what we have. So now, there's our numbers. During what decade did the total number of degrees awarded increase the most?
What was the question?
I looked at question C. During what decade did the total number of degrees awarded increase the most? Where did we see the greatest gain? In what single decade?
I would say between 1960 and 1970 for the women.
Right, and the men make a pretty good gain there. Probably if we were going to make a second place contender,
it would be from 2000 to 2010. Do you agree? That's the other place where we see both lines going up.
Yes.
But the difference between, you know, if we are considering them together, then we can just read the top of the ladies' band. That's the total
for everybody. And so in
1960, that looks like it's right around the 400,000 mark. And in 1970, it's at 800,000. So it basically doubled in that decade from 60 to 70. When we go over and look at 2000, we started at, let's call it 1,200,000, and 1,200,000, and then we finish at 1,600,000. So the difference between those two is 400,000 people, okay? Our difference over here was 400,000 people. It's about the same. Make sense? Those two decades show the most growth.
And those are called stacked graphs?
This is called a stacked graph. Yes. So they're still a little bit trickier to read if you want specific numbers. If you just want to look at trends and you're wanting to make comparisons, they're very nice. From a visual perspective, they're very nice. From a calculating perspective, they're less nice, okay?
So, Professor Long?
Yes.
Back to that question, even though the number of people getting degrees is the same, proportionately, it's a lot higher in 1960 to 1970 because it actually doubles from the previous decade.
Right.
Whereas in 2000 to 2010, it's the same bump in number of people, but proportionately, it's a lot less.
I agree. What's the name we've been using for that comparison?
Relative?
Yes. From a relative perspective, it's a much bigger deal from 1960 to 70 than it is from 2000 to 2010.
It absolutely is.
It's a really good point. Thank you very much.
All right. The last thing they ask then, question E,
do you think the stack plot is an effective way to display these data And what are some other ways they might have used instead? So what do you think about this?
I would have liked to see two graphs side by side because I feel it would be less confusing because I have the tendency, just like Sarah did, to automatically assume that the women were actually underneath the men, but they were actually rising above them until you reminded us that we're only measuring in that little middle area.
Right. Yes.
So I think, like, if I had not learned this in this class, I would have the idea that the pink is being covered by the blue.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, I see
and
what you're saying.
If it were in two different graphs, then I would see that they're both starting at the same number. And then, whereas this can be a bit given, I think, for someone who maybe doesn't know that, unless they don't even think what I just thought.
Right. Well, I think, let's see, if you look to the left on the page, just right across, you don't have to turn any pages, 336. Do you see the, now I can't think of the name of it, it's really getting late. The bar graph that's in two colors there. It's figure 5.25, net gain production.
Everybody see
what I'm looking at?
Yes.
Okay. Page 336, figure 5.25. So what if we had done a similar thing with men and women being our two different color bars, okay? And we represented this data.
Would that be
easier to read and get your data numbers? For sure, okay? No subtraction required. Would we still see the same thing? I mean, is there anything we particularly lose?
I think there is because on the stack plot, since it goes by line, it actually shows how the degrees increase within the decade, whereas in a bar graph, I think you would probably have to average the decade.
That's true. We don't see what's happening from one decade to the next. It just jumps. It's a choppier growth. Okay. So I would agree with you. That's a good point.
I think the other advantage that just immediately comes to mind about the stacked plot is I can very easily read my total. If I'm not caring about the difference between men and women and I'm just wanting to look at total number of degrees given, the stacked plot, all I got to do is read the top. And if I had
two separate bars, I'd have to constantly be trying to figure out how to put those two together. Okay. So there are some good things to be said about these stacked graphs. We're usually not very familiar with them. Of all the ones discussed in this particular section, I think they're the least familiar, and so I wanted to make certain that we talked about them. We talked about when you're looking at a study, one of the questions was, had they presented their information in a deceptive way? Is there anything particularly deceptive about how they presented their information? So thinking back to that, I want you to turn to page 332 and look at perceptual distortions. And the figure has these dollar bills in different sizes. So a $1980 in 1990 would have only been worth 63 cents. Okay, relatively speaking, it's spending power. Okay, and then when you come up to 2010, now it only has the spending power of 39 cents. So in this figure, by design, it's the length of the dollar that you're supposed to be looking at for the difference. But visually, we think about the area, the total size of that dollar. And so we see the difference between the one on the left and the one right next to it as being like more than double the value,
when in fact that's not the case.
Okay, so it's visually distorted, or it's easily visually distorted. If you read it and it says go by the length, you're like, okay, go by the length. But otherwise, you tend to look at the entire picture, and it deceives you. So that would just be an example of somebody presenting their data. And it's not that it's intentional. It's not that by design they're trying to deceive you, but it can just be visually rather distorted, and for a person less familiar with the data, you're more likely to be confused by it.
Okay. The person that's writing it,
and they've lived and breathed this study, they've worked on it, they've sweated hours over it, it's perfectly clear to them, but it might not be perfectly clear to us. All right. So you want to try to think about when you're creating your graphs and deciding how to display your information, think about a person who's less familiar with the data than you. Will this be clear to them? All right. When you're choosing how you want to present it.
So as I read here, the example, is it basically saying that at the end in 2010, it was only worth 0.15 instead of 0.39?
No, what they're saying is if you consider the area, the relative area of those two pictures, it would only be worth 15 cents rather than 39 cents. Okay. So that's why they're saying it's distorted because we tend to look at the area.
All right.
I think that is sufficient for our discussion of ways to display data. I think the rest of it is pretty self-explanatory. So we're going to look at causation versus correlation because this is a really big deal.
Understanding the difference between those two words is so important. Find a new slide. I want to work tonight on the whiteboard.
There we go. Okay.
So two words, they both begin with C. Causation, and if I misspell it, you go ahead and coach me.
Spelling not being my best thing.
Correlation. Two R's?
Yes.
And two L's?
One L.
See, this is how I spell.
It's one of those.
Okay. These two things. Causation, root word is cause. Does one thing cause the other?
Okay.
Does one thing cause the other? Correlation means they're related. They trend together. Okay? And so what one does, the other does. Or what one does, the opposite occurs. You can look at two variables and say they trend together. That's positive correlation. Or you can look at two variables and say actually they go in the opposite direction. So you think about statistics. You think about you're collecting some data. All right? And then based on that data, you start talking about, let's plot our data and what conclusions can we draw. Now, one of the questions I remember on the practice quiz, they had, and I don't think they showed a picture for you, but they asked you this question about, you know, what kind of correlation do you think there is between these two variables? And so it was
size of family. You know, we could put some numbers in here. We go out very far and we don't find too many U.S. families anymore that hit those numbers. And then over here was a number of pairs of shoes.
Per child.
I think.
It's it. I am, you know, I might have remembered wrong.
And so we would say every child has one pair, two pairs, three pairs, four pairs. And here in the U.S., we would have to just keep going up.
I do not want to talk about my daughter's closet. But anyway, okay. So the question was this. Is there a correlation between the size of the family and the number of pairs of shoes that each child has? And you were asked to say, what do you believe is true about this relationship? So I can definitely say that when my daughter was very young and there were three children at home and there was a mother at home and only one income was flowing into the family, that the Long family, when there were five people at home, and correspondingly less income, if my kids each had two pairs of shoes, we were doing pretty well. And both pairs fit, and they looked decent, all right? And that was a good day, because my boys could get through shoes like nobody's business. Now that we are a family of three, Two of us don't outgrow our shoes anymore. Okay, we've only got one that's outgrowing shoes. I'm not sure if this graph is high enough even yet, okay? And it's not just the daughter, all right? I am guilty, my husband is guilty, but put one in a six because it's not too embarrassing of a number to put in, okay? But that's what, you know, that's how different our numbers are. Now, is that true for every family? Probably not. Okay, probably not. But I would guess that if we were to gather data, okay, if we were to check in with
500 families
of various sizes, and we checked on family size, number of pair of shoes per kid on average, and we made our dots, okay, then I would estimate that our dot plot would look something
I know, probably not that one, actually. Rid of the one that I heard on. I doubt that one would be there.
Maybe if we had 500. Okay. And so now we can talk about the correlation of this data. In general, to the left, the dots are higher, and to the right, the dots are lower. Do we agree? People at home,
yes.
All right.
Yes.
If I was to try and draw what's called a trend line, or let's see,
I think our current instruction right now calls it a line of best fit. So those of you that have children coming home asking you questions about their homework, that's probably the terminology that would come up for this question.
If we were to try to construct a line of best fit, then when we draw our line, our goal is for that line to go through the middle of the data. I clearly cannot hit all of these points and still have a straight line. So I'm not going to hit every point. It's not connect the dot or dot to dot, but instead it's one line that I'm going to draw through there. And I'm going to try to miss about as many points above and below the line, okay? So that on average, my differences are as close to zero as possible.
So I'm not doing this scientifically at all, but let's say something
like that. All right, I hit a couple of points, and the rest of them, I've got about the same number above as below. Now, statistically, if you're going to do this, there's a number of ways you could do it, all of them related to the study of statistics.
And a procedure called regression.
And even the $100 graphing calculator that your kid uses at school will do a regression, any number of them, actually. Okay? So it would find this line for me if I plugged in all of this data into my calculator. You can also buy software packages that do this if you're really in the business. So there's a lot of ways to go about this. You can just visually do what I do, you know, and just estimate. All right, so here would be my trend line. Here's what we need to see. This trend line heads downhill. Everybody with me on that part? It's going downhill. And so because of that, this has
negative
correlation. It has negative correlation. All right, if it had positive correlation, then the dots would trend in such a way that the line that I drew went uphill and it showed growth. That would be positive correlation. So that's those two terms. Now, what's my dot plot going to look like if I have no correlation at all?
Let me do some erasing. Oh, let's see. I need to erase this too.
These are the questions that ask you the things that kind of make you laugh.
You're like, what?
What did they actually say? So it's things like, let's check the correlation between number of green shirts you own.
So we're going to check your closet and get a count. How many green shirts do you own?
And then we're going to compare that to the green that you bring home. So dollars earned. Now, does anybody believe that if I just bought more green shirts, I would earn more money?
No.
We're not believing.
It's like if I had more yellow shirts, then I would be happier on Mondays.
I would be happier on Mondays. You can make a better case for that one, actually. Emotions are more affected by color than, you know, the shirt that you wear, so and your pay. But anyway, so if we were then to do this poll and start talking to a lot of people and plotting, you know, how many green shirts do they have? How much money do they make? We would get dots that are just all over the place, okay? We can't really draw a trend line. You know, I'm no better off drawing this one than I am drawing this one. I mean, you know, there just isn't a pattern here, okay? So what that tells us is these two ideas have no correlation,
okay?
Instead of being negative, there's just none.
Okay, there's no
trend. There's no relationship between these two things. So sometimes when we do research and we believe that there's going to be a relationship between two things and we do our investigation and we plot our data says, you know what? You were wrong. There is no relationship between these two things. Okay, so sometimes it just works out that way. But this would be an example of no correlation.
I wanted to make certain
that everyone understood correlation, and there are pictures in your book and whatever about it, because I know there were several questions asking you about negative, is this going to be related with negative correlation or positive correlation? So I wanted everyone to have heard what those terms meant and seen examples of them. Okay, so then there's that question about causation. Okay, does this thing in fact actually cause the other? They may trend together as one increases, another increases, okay? If one goes down, the other one goes down. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it is the cause, okay? That can just mean there is correlation. There's positive correlation between the two. So on page 349, there are some guidelines for establishing causality. They're in a green box, the bottom half of page 349. Okay? We want to be very careful before we decide one thing causes another.
Very careful about making that decision. So you look for situations
where you think you see this correlation effect, okay? And make sure that even when you take all the other factors out, anything else that could be causing it, you still see the correlation. Think back to the conversation that we had earlier about textbook A and textbook B, and two classes are using this textbook, and class A had higher scores, and so they said, oh, textbook A is better. And we said, wow, there's a lot of confounding variables. There's a lot of other variables in there. So if we could revamp our study and get two groups that look alike in their population and get them to have the same teacher so that we know they're getting the same instruction, all right, and then we test them, then what do we see? Do we still see textbook A is better than B? All right, that would make a better case if we can remove other factors and we still see the same relationship, okay? But we've got to really look carefully. Are there some other things that could be influencing, all right? Then, among groups that differ only in the presence or absence of this suspected cause, do you lose the other thing? Okay, so, you know, I'm trying to think what would be a good example of that one. I cannot think of the actual technical term, but there is a disease, a lung disease, that coal miners tend to get more than anybody else, okay? And so it's commonly accepted now that it's the conditions in the coal mine that bring on this disease. Now, of course, for years, you know, the mining industry resisted that interpretation of the data. They wanted to say other things were in play, okay? Well, it could be just because of family genetics, because coal mining tends to be one of those jobs that my grandpa mined coal, and my daddy mined coal, and now I mine coal. And so they're going, see, it's just a family thing. They're just genetically predisposed to this disease. And so they had to go back and do their studies and say, okay, let's find people who are first-generation coal miners. Can we find first-generation coal miners that still have this disease? Then we can take out the idea that their family was predisposed to this illness. And so you're looking for different things. So if they took that away and now they don't get this illness, the coal company can say, see, we told you. It was just a family thing. It was just inherited. It didn't have anything to do with mining coal. But if they could take it away and that didn't get rid of the disease, now you've got a stronger case for it's not genetics. It's coal mining. Okay, it's the conditions in the coal mine that are bringing this on. So that would be an example of that.
Would the example you used earlier about the car and the seatbelts, would that one work on this one? You remember?
Oh, trying to determine causality. Okay. In that case, we're really not.
Because, I mean, you could still pass away. Well, oh, but you said earlier, like I said, I never pulled a corpse.
He never unbuckled a corpse was his statement. Yeah. Now, certainly there are occasions when they do, okay? There are people who die in car accidents wearing their seatbelts. For that particular officer, he had worked 25 years, and he'd never worked an accident of that type. Mm-hmm. And he'd worked a lot of accidents. Mm-hmm. Now, it didn't mean that nobody ever died with a seatbelt on. But in his experience, he'd not run across it.
So would that work on this then?
Well, the difficulty with that is you're not so much trying to prove what causes as what prevents.
Okay.
So that's a little different investigation. It has some degree of difficulty with it also. Let's see. Look for evidence that larger amounts of the suspected cause produce larger amounts of the effect. So if I am in the coal mines for more years, does that increase my likelihood of getting this disease? Okay. Do we find this disease more often in people who have spent more years in the industry? Is what they're saying, or do we not? Okay. And in fact, it was true in that case. Okay.
So maybe we could do like fast food and obesity?
Absolutely. There have been some studies done in fast food and obesity. Okay, and the impact one has on another. So, certainly. But again, you know, you start trying to talk about causality, and there's so many things you've got to control. If you want to do fast food and obesity, you know, you have to rule out all the other factors that might contribute to obesity. You know, is it just that I'm a couch potato? Is it just, you know, I mean, there's all these things. So it's very, very, very hard. The burden of proof is very high for proving that one thing causes another, okay? It's high in court, okay? It's high outside of court as well. So you wanna be careful when you read a study that says this is what causes this. Look very carefully because there could be a lot of other things to think about. They may be related. It may be true that they exist together a good deal of the time, but it may not guarantee that one causes the other. Okay, it may just be a case of positive correlation. Best case scenario, you would like to be able to construct an experiment where you can make it happen. Now, we don't want to construct an experiment where we cause people to get this horrible lung disease just to prove that, you know, coal mining will do it. So there's some ethics that are involved in what you're trying to investigate as well. But in some situations, you can absolutely do that. Okay, and so that's what they're talking about. So then in the green box on page 351, last section, they do a very nice, there's two case studies in here, and I would encourage you to read both of them. They're on page 350. One of them is about airbags and children, and one of them is about cell phones and driving. Okay, two topics that we frequently hear about. Okay, two topics that, you know, it matters. It's a matter of safety. When I'm on the road and the light turns green and the person in front of me doesn't move, Doesn't move. I'm like, I know you're on your phone, okay? And I would like to be able to disable your phone from my car right now so you would drive. And I'm just irritated because I'm going to miss the light. But it's going to be much worse if they're so engrossed in their phone and then they look up and then they go about the time that the light's not green anymore and there's an accident. So, you know, this whole thing with cell phones, it's important to all of us because we're all on the road, okay? But very difficult to prove that cell phone usage increases accidents. All right, very difficult to show causality. You can show correlation, but not always causality. So I encourage you to read both of those, all right? But when we're talking about how confident are we that one thing is the cause of another, they say, you know, you can have kind of three levels of confidence. You can have, I think it's possible that this causes this. I think it's possible. The evidence suggests that these things go together. Sometimes that's just a lot of positive correlation, okay? But you can say it's possible. Then you can get to the level of probable cause. We have good reason to suspect that the correlation involved here involves some causality. Okay, so in the legal system, probable cause is the general standard for getting a judge to grant a warrant for search or wiretap. So if you think about it from that perspective, is our case strong enough to do something like that? You know, how would a judge weigh in? Is there probable cause? And then cause beyond reasonable doubt. We've got some kind of a physical model that proves this is the relationship between these two things, that sort of thing, and therefore we can do it. And notice still, it still is beyond reasonable doubt. It doesn't mean beyond all doubt. Okay? There's still some wiggle room in there, but we're going to say this is a really strong case. All right? So the language used in court cases, because most things where they're arguing one thing causes another, they land in court. Okay? People are arguing about a large sum of money that they want to get, you know, and so I want to show that your negligence caused my injury. I want to show that your ineptitude as an instructor is the reason my child has a high school diploma but is illiterate. I want to show, you know, whatever it is that you want to show. But you're trying to show causality. It was decisions the school district made that led my child to have a diploma but not be literate. You know, you're wanting to hold that school district responsible. There's a lot of burden of proof for you to show causality.
Okay.
Anybody have any questions about this from their practice quiz? It's like scary to think that we could be done early for once. I'm just going to call up a practice quiz. Let's do a quick walkthrough and we'll call it a night. All right. So we're going to team up and take this thing together. Some of these questions you may have seen. Some of these questions you may not have seen. Question number one. In a study to determine the most popular automobile on the road, which of the following, and I really need to know this, is the most representative sample. Okay. So do you want to just check who drives by your house? Do you want to check who drives by the local high school? Do you want to check who's parked at the airport? Or do you want a random sample of the cars driving on the highway? What seems like the best sample of the overall population?
Cars on the highway.
Highway.
Cars on the highway, okay? Some people have never been to the airport. A lot of people try to stay away from the local high school, okay? And your neighborhood surely isn't that busy. So by far the best statistic here is cars driving on the highway. There was an interesting question in one quiz. Well, we'll finish taking this one. It was asking what you should ask people if you were trying to determine the most popular car. And I was kind of humored at some of their options. Here's question two. Which of the following describes a study in which the participants naturally form groups by choice?
Okay,
a single blind, an observational study, a case control study, or a double blind experiment?
Case control.
Yes. Things are already done. We're trying to determine from situations that have already happened, and they've already had either a positive or a negative outcome. The decision is already made about who goes in which group. Number three, which of the following study results imply there is a problem with the quality of education at Rydell High?
Isn't that a great Grease reference,
by the way? Okay, so which of the following implies there's a problem with quality of education? Number one, 25% of the senior class scored below average on the math portion of a national aptitude test. Is that a cause for concern?
Yes.
Hannah says it's a real problem. We'll come back to that one in a minute. Question offer B, 83% of the seniors who applied for admission to Valley State College were accepted. Is that a problem? C, 53% of the senior class was accepted for admission to Valley State College in the fall.
Is that a problem?
And then 30% of the senior class scored above average on the writing portion of the national aptitude test. Well, in my mind, I'm like, okay, people scoring above average surely does not indicate a problem, right? So I would eliminate answer D for sure, okay? And if 83% of our students can get into, I'm assuming Valley State College is like your local state college, okay? You know, not some, they're not trying to get into Harvard, okay? They're just trying to get into the state, local state college that's nearby. So if 83% of them can get in, that's pretty good. I gotta tell you, not everybody's going to college. So I wouldn't be unhappy with that one. So we gotta think about, are we unhappy with a 53% acceptance rate to Valley State College?
Just slightly
over half. Or 25% of the senior class scores below average on the math portion of a national aptitude test. Anna, you didn't like A. You thought that was a problem.
Yeah, because so the way I figured that out was problem correlating actually with something negative. So okay. Just pulling that language and saying problem equals negative. All of those are all accepted above average. Those are all positive words.
Uh-huh.
Scored below average is a negative phrase.
Okay, it will let me write. So she's going just based on the language. She says this is negative.
And I'm looking for a problem with quality of education.
So I've spotted the problem. Do we agree? Do we disagree? Do you think it's a bigger problem that only 53% of the class was accepted for admission to Valley State College?
I would say it's a bigger problem that 25% scored below.
Below the national average?
Yes.
Okay. National average. Okay. When they talk about scores on a normed test, a national average, are they saying that 25% of them, quote unquote, failed the test?
No, they just scored below the average.
Okay, how do I determine the average on a national test?
Average?
We look at all the scores that we get, right? And so
if you figure out what the norm is on a national test, you should have one half of the population is above average and one half is below.
Because we picked the middle as our norm. Does this make sense? Now we're not talking about did they pass the test. We're saying of all of their scores, what was the score in the middle? That's the 50% mark. 50% of the people scored above that score and 50% of the people scored below that score. Okay, so nationally, on average, half of the people in the nation score below and half of the people in the nation score above. They only have 25% coming in below. I have to tell you that actually their math department looks good here. Okay, because they've got 75% above the norm, whereas nationally, you only have 50% above the norm, because the norm is the middle of all of your data. That's how a norm referenced test works. When they're talking about SAT scores, ACT scores, if they're talking about the national norm, they're saying half of them are above, half of them are below. Okay, now if they start talking about a specific score, that's different. And then you're talking about their performance on that test. But a norm reference, that's just half or above and half or below. So if you can get 25% below, whereas the nation has 50% below, you're above average to the nation. That's actually a good thing. Our concern is we would hope college-bound kids can almost all get into the local state university. Okay? Now, in Texas, can everybody go to UT Austin? No, because everybody wants to go to UT Austin and they don't have room for them. But can everybody get into one of the UT colleges? Probably, if they're willing to expand their search, okay? Some kids just get it in their head, they want to go to Austin or nothing. But they can usually get into some University of Texas school if they've got decent grades. They should be able to get in. Whereas, you know, 53%, that's not a real high. I mean, it's not horrible, but it's not real high either. So I would have some concerns about that. All right, so that question,
y'all have to think about that.
That one turns up for you. Oops. Get my pen off so I can go. Question number 4. Ooh, I messed it up. Okay. Question number 4. See if I can get this slide with my pen. No, because now it wants to do that.
There we go.
Okay. A health researcher randomly selects 500 high school students from the city of Oak Grove in a private interview. The researcher asked the students whether they had ever used drugs. She concluded that only 8% of the high school students at Oak Grove had ever used drugs. What could possibly have gone wrong with this study? The wording of the question, the setting may discourage honest answers, selection bias, the source of the study, or participation bias. You think it's the setting. They have to have this one-on-one conversation. They got to look this lady in the eye and say, yep, I use drugs. All the time I do that. I'm going to tell you, it's going to happen. Teenagers lie about a lot less than that. So I would agree with you. There's a really big problem. There might be some other problems, but that's the biggest one. Identify the variable as qualitative or quantitative. I didn't mention this one, so these are good to know. Movie critic ratings of the new movie on a scale of 0 to 10, where 10 is the best movie I've ever seen, and 0 is the worst movie I have ever seen. Is that scale qualitative or quantitative?
I would say qualitative.
Say it again. Why would you say it, Christine? I interrupted.
Because you're rating the quality of something of a movie you've seen.
Yeah, those numbers don't really represent numbers. I mean, they just represent a relative rating. I could have just as well ranked them A through H, okay, and it would have meant the same thing, okay? So no, it's quantitative when your number is being used as a number, okay? It's qualitative if the number is just a reference or a value, even if it is, you know, a number.
Okay, let's see. The height of individuals
in meters. Now are we qualitative or quantitative?
Quantitative.
Yep, we actually took a measurement. That number is measuring height in this case. The graph below shows approximate annual percentage growth rate in the world's population. Let's see. It says annual growth rate in percentage. I'm glad I got this one because I wanted to talk about this one. This is showing the annual percentage growth rate in world population from 1960. There's 1960, then 70, 80, 90, the year 2000, the year 2010. Okay, Data is estimated by census information. All right. Describe the trend in world population during the period from 1976 to 1978. They're so amusing. Okay. So I'm assuming that's 1976. Would you agree? And so 76 to 78 is just going to be a little chunk of this where it looks pretty close to level. Would everybody agree? Okay. So it's remaining the same. Does that mean that the increase, that the population is remaining the same? Or does it mean its rate of growth is remaining the same? It lines up with what, 1.75 close, or 1.7? So the growth rate is 1.7. Or 7.5 in 1976, and the growth rate looks like it's still about the same in 1978. When I went through quickly taking this the first time, I got this question and I went, oh, it's level. That means it didn't stay, didn't change. So I picked B, it remains constant. This was the question I missed, okay? So I went back and went, why did I miss that question, okay? Well, because it has a growth rate. To have no growth at all, it would have to be down here at zero growth rate. Okay? Am I reading this question right, or is this a different question? Some of you are looking at me like I'm crazy, which
no,
means
that
I might be.
No, would be constant.
This one would be constant?
Yes.
Because why? Defend it for me.
So whenever I took this, it asked me the earlier years, so 60 to like 62 or something.
Right, this
that,
thing right here.
That, yeah, that one was, it increases at a faster and faster rate.
Absolutely.
So if it was like years 70, go over to, with your cursor,
mm-hmm.
to like 90, maybe 1990.
Here's 91. Okay.
So like right there, it's decreasing at a steady rate.
Okay.
And like from like 65, that little hump over there by 65,
mm-hmm.
then it goes up. That's increasing at a steady rate. It's not going a faster and faster rate because that one's not super fast.
Okay.
That's my rationale behind
that's
that.
That's your rationale. Okay. Anybody else want to weigh in on the interpretation of this graph? This is growth rate. It's got a growth rate of 1.7. It still has a growth rate of 1.7. The population is still growing. But this is asking me about the trend. The trend is constant. Does that make sense? The trend is constant, but the population is growing. There is a question in here where it gives you this exact same graph. That's the one I missed. And it asked what the population was doing. And I missed it because I said, oh, the population is not changing. That's not true. The population is growing at 1.7, okay? It's just that it's growing at 1.7 across that entire span of years, okay? So read very carefully the question they're asking you to answer. You probably know the right information, but you could miss it because you misread it. I say this because I know I misread that one. I was like, I missed one. What did I do? And I had to go back and look. All right. Here we've got the graph where we're comparing 1999 and 2000, two different colors of bar graphs. All right. I doubt that's a problem for anybody. Here is our information, unemployment rate, median rent, okay? And we are supposed to find the scatter plot that agrees with our data, okay? So, you know, I told you, you won't have to make the graph. You'll just have to pick out the right one. So I'm going to look at the labels. Rent is along the bottom here. And then on these two, unemployment rate is along the bottom. So I'm going to figure out the first column should be your horizontal. So I'm going to go, oh, well, my independent variable.
And it tells you that in the, if you scroll up a bit, it tells you which one's horizontal and which one's vertical. So you actually have to call upon your memory to remember, oh, this means
well, unemployment on horizontal and median price on vertical. Yes. Okay.
So, like for people who are like, can't
right.
remember, then
so
that can use them.
Make sure you choose from these two because that's what the directions say. So again, there's a lot of things in this particular test that I think are reading issues, not math. And so I would encourage you make sure you read carefully when you're trying to take the quiz this week. Not so much because your calculations are going to be off. There aren't a lot of calculations. But read carefully so that you're answering the question they want. All right. We don't mean to do anything with this. If you have no more questions, we are dismissed for the night. Thank you very much, and I will see you next week. Remember, you're over halfway done. Make sure your work is over halfway done, and we're all good.
Good night.
Good night.